Welcome to the Joyous Expansion Podcast. I'm your host, Brett Dupree, scouring the globe to bring you stories of courage, passion, and resilience. If I could sum up this podcast into one word, I would use empathy. Now let's get inspired. Hello and welcome to episode 106 of the Joyous Expansion Podcast. I am your host once again, Brett Dupree, about to drop some spiritual knowledge on you. So now it's a part of my podcast where I talk about what's going on in my life, because if I can't tell you what's going into my life, how can I expect my guests to tell me what's going on theirs? Or the vulnerable thing. It's just been so long. It's been almost 2 months since I posted my last podcast. And just be honest, I'm running out of steam. I only have three more after these because I just want to get these out for these people. And I honestly feel like I have completely failed them. And that's fine. That's fine. I just have to live with that feeling. And I think that's the important thing, is learning how to live your feelings as I've gone through my depression, as I've been talking about in the last, I guess, year, and working on that. And the emptiness feeling of just not really knowing what I want to do. I don't really see purpose in my life right now like I used to. I used to know exactly what I want to be and how I wanted my life to look like, and I don't know what it is right now. So what I decided to do is start filling my time with things that I enjoy. And so I started reading. I got the Thrawn trilogy. I like the original Thrawn trilogy as a child. It's not canon anymore, but Thrawn was one of my favorite characters growing up. And so I have gotten to the point where I decided to finally get the books and read them instead of just listening to the audiobooks like I generally do. Like thinking to myself, I don't have the time, but, you know, I think I do. I think I do have the time, and I have finished one. I have two more to go. I'm very excited about the Thrawn trilogy and reading. And I started playing video games more. Got a PS5. That was super awesome. The thrill of the hunt of the PS5 was really fun. Just got lucky and able to get one. Still can't believe it's here. And I've been playing Miles Morales. Super fun. Super fun. Super fun. But the more interesting thing, I haven't exactly done a lot, but I have started and I have a bunch of supplies, is painting miniatures. It's something I have always wanted to do, but the task of painting miniatures always felt too daunting. And I finally read this article on how to get started cheaply, and it just made me realize the problem I was having is, number one, I wanted to be good at it right away, of course, but I can't do that. I'm not artistically gifted, if you will, and I am not artistically practiced. I am somebody who believes, yes, some people have a natural ability to be good artists, but it's the practice and the love of it that allows them to practice for them to become really good at it. And pretty much anybody, unless you have something of some sort of mental or physical disability, and that mental disability could just be the parts of your brain just aren't connected for art. Some people are not connected for art. But even those people can probably still do a good enough job of painting miniatures. And the fact that a painted miniature just looks better than a miniature that's not painted. Basically, I just started to do that, but, you know, that's just part of your life. As you look at things you want to become good at, you look at the big picture too often. You don't look at the thousand steps along the way. And the fact that getting started is the important part and the lessons learned, which I'm learning in painting. I've painted about 12 so far? I finished 8, and I'm doing more now. I'm doing a bunch in bulk because they have all the same colors. But I have gotten better brushes because there needs to be tiny things, and I'm just learning the techniques better. And I have cooler miniatures that need more detail, so I need to get better at it if I want to try to paint those. And since I have that Kickstarter addiction, this at least makes it feel worth it, you know. Even if it sucks, they're mine. I don't care. I just like the fact that I'm doing it, and it makes me feel good. And that's the important part about doing anything artistic, is you don't have to be good at it. You just have to feel good about doing it. It's a lot of times I just notice with my mind just getting in my way of doing it, just thinking of spending over $100 and something dollars on paints and trying to figure out the correct exact colors to use and stuff. And the reality is just do it. Be damned with how you do, you know? Because the important part is getting started. So I have started painting these miniatures, and I'm having a good time. And I think that's the important thing. It's just having a good time and learning. So I think that's just a good way to just look at life. You know, I just like to look at life lessons everywhere. I've been thinking a lot about painting these miniatures, and it's okay if I take a break and not do them all at once. And it's okay if I go slowly. It's okay if I just be me and enjoy what I'm doing. And just do it for my enjoyment. That's the important thing. And then, so this is just my challenge, my suggestion to you is what artistic thing can you do in your life that you've been putting off because you don't think you're good enough or it's just too much? Just figure out the cheapest, crappiest way to get started. It doesn't matter if you do great. You know what painting is worse than the painting you can paint? The painting that you never painted. If that came out right. But basically, just go for it. Have fun. Life is meant to be enjoyed. Don't think of yourself as not artistic. Don't create a big plan so you don't even get started. Just do it. Like Nike always says. Speaking of just doing it, I have an interview with Ray Blakeney. Ray Blakeney is probably like every other award-winning Filipino-American entrepreneur who grew up in Turkey and lives in Mexico that you know. He started his business with his wife as a business partner in 2008. Since then, he's been bootstrapping multiple 6 and 7 online businesses. 6 and 7-figure online businesses. Most of this was done from his home in his Superman pajamas. He's been featured in Forbes, Entrepreneurial Magazine, the Boston Globe, and other top publications. He's spoken at many multiple conferences around the world. Some of his businesses include Live Linguia, one of the top online language schools, Twiducate, and Podcast Hawk. Now here is my interview with Ray Blakeney. Hello, Ray, and welcome to my podcast.
Brett, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on. Can you give the listeners a brief introduction to who you are?
Yeah, so here's the 30-second elevator pitch to who I am. So my name's Ray Blakeney. I was born in the Philippines. I grew up in Istanbul, Turkey. My dad's from the United States, but grew up in Rhodesia. I now live in Mexico and have lived here for the last 12 years because my wife's Mexican and my son is, what would that make him? Like American, Filipino, Mexican. And for a living, I bootstrap 6 and 7-figure online businesses. My background is as a software engineer.
What was life like growing up in Turkey?
Well, at the time, it was normal to me, right? I didn't know any different. I'll date myself a little bit. You know, I'm 40 years old. So this was like, you know, pre-internet days that I was living in Turkey and all the rest of it. And we didn't even really have that much access to US television. I remember when I was growing up, we only had one channel. It was the government channel. It was on for 4 hours a day. So like, I really had no idea what it was like growing up in the US, you know, to compare it to. So my life to me was pretty normal growing up in Turkey. I went to the American school. So, you know, I had friends from all over the world that were there. So I didn't go to the local school system, but my first language is technically Turkish. My first word was Turkish. Then I said something in Tagalog afterwards. And then I said something in English after that. To me, it was a great childhood, I think. I mean, you know, I had a great time. I loved living there. And I kind of had that weird mix. This was, again, before the days where everybody was traveling, I guess pre-COVID, in that it was still exotic to have a Filipino-American kid who spoke fluent Turkish like a Turk, you know, at your, you know, get-togethers. I was always a novelty and I kind of enjoyed that.
Do you feel that growing up in that kind of multicultural environment shaped who you are?
Absolutely. The biggest culture shock I have ever had in my life is when I moved back to the US. Because the weird part is I sound American, right? I mean, if you heard me on the phone, you would just think I grew up in New England where my family's from. Nobody would think anything else of it. So when I moved back to the US, this was my junior year in high school. I had to go to a boarding school because the American school in Turkey only went up to the sophomore year. So my parents sent me to the US to finish high school and go to college. And I did not fit in at all. I would not get any of the references, the cultural references, because I didn't grow up with them, right? They would talk about TV shows that I had never heard of or radio shows that I'd never heard of. They would talk about baseball and American football. And I'm like, yeah, I've never been to a baseball game or an American football game in my life. I have since then. But, you know, at 14, 15, I had never been to one in my life. I couldn't have told you the basic rules of American football. I have found that I feel more comfortable in places where I'm not supposed to fit in, which is why I became an expat again. I've been living in Mexico for the last 12 years, and we're probably going to move to Southeast Asia in the next 2 or 3 years. But being in a place where they don't expect me to know the local culture feels a lot more comfortable to me. Like, kind of being that outsider is kind of where I feel like, you know, I belong. And that's kind of how I lived my life since then.
So growing up, did you always want to start your own business?
Absolutely not. It was a weird thing. In the, you know, the yearbook in my school in Turkey, I was the guy that people said, this guy's going to start his $1 million business one day, right? Everybody else saw it, but I didn't. I was the kid at the bake sale where if you couldn't sell your cupcakes, you gave them to Ray and he would make sure they got sold, right? It never even occurred to me. It didn't even click. Starting a business was not on the radar. I also liked computers. I was the kid who stayed in the lunch break and kind of wrote code on computers. I was very lucky to be at a school where we had computers, and this was like late 80s, early 90s, and I was already writing code. And I really liked it because you kind of have that instant gratification when you're writing code, in the sense you write it and you see the results. You write it, you see the results. And so I thought, no, I don't know what everybody's talking about. I'm going to be a computer programmer. I'm going to make computer games like I think every kid computer programmer thinks they're going to do. Until I found out that, you know, making computer games is a lot less fun than playing them. So I did not pursue that. But I thought I was going to be a computer programmer all my life. And that's what I did. I graduated from college. I worked in Silicon Valley and for some Fortune 500 companies writing code. I was on a life plan kind of that I thought I was set out for me and had me set for life. But then it took a turn, unexpected turn, that turned out for the best.
It's funny you say that, because actually that was the same thing I wanted to do, was program video games. And I actually reached one of my life goals, which is to be in the credits of a video game.
Ooh.
Yep. I'm in the credits of Mass Effect as one of the testers.
Which one?
The first one, Mass Effect.
Oh, the original. I'm playing Andromeda right now. I mean, literally, that's what I play after work these days. I'm playing Andromeda. So I was like, curious. Cool. I had to play the trilogy myself.
I worked for the official Microsoft Studios, and game testing sucks.
Yeah, well, that's what I have friends who've done it. And, you know, you literally have to see what you can break. And it's like really repetitive from what they said. It's not like, hey, we just get to play fun games all day. And then you have to take notes on everything and then send them in on cases. Wow.
Yeah. So it's basically, I tell people, it's not the difference in like testing a spreadsheet, really.
And that's, I mean, but as kids, we don't realize that, right? We always think of like making or being part of a computer game has to be as fun as playing them is. It's not. It really isn't.
Very true. So what got you started into wanting to go in business on your own?
Okay. Well, one little caveat. I didn't technically go on with my own. My first business, I started with my wife. The story is this. So as I mentioned, I was in the U.S. I was working as a computer programmer, doing pretty well. You know, computer programming pays well. I didn't work for a software company. I worked for a company that had, you know, used software. So the stress was really low. Because we didn't have like these tight deadlines where we got to release this new version of the software. It was more kind of customizing for internal use. They treated us well, and it was deathly boring. There was nothing, my job was not, it was just something that kind of paid my bills so that I could live my life outside of it. But I was spending like eight hours a day in my job. So I'm like, really, there's got to be a better way you can, you know, to spend my time. There was a commercial on TV at the time. This was back in 2005, 2006, that said, if they were to write a book about your life, would anybody want to read it? I remember distinctly seeing that commercial and thinking to myself, I'm like, no, nobody. I mean, I wouldn't read my own book. I mean, all I do is I go to a cube every day. I sit there, I write code, and then I come home. I do some fun stuff outside of work, but literally, you know, a large chunk of my day would be unreadable to these people. So I decided, I'm like, I'm going to change it. So I joined the Peace Corps. I quit everything and I went and worked for almost no pay in southern Mexico, volunteering with indigenous communities for the next 2 years, which led us to starting the business because I met my wife at the time. She wasn't in the indigenous community. She was one of the staff of the Peace Corps. She was one of the Spanish teachers. We were dating. And at the end of that, I had the option of moving. They give you a whopping like $3,000 to buy your plane ticket back to the United States and help you pay a down payment on your first month's rent so you can get started. And I was talking to my wife and we were like, okay, we can move to the U.S. She's a bilingual teacher. I'm a computer engineer. We'll do fine. Or we can try something else. And she always wanted to start a language school, right? It had always been her dream. So I'm like, why don't we just give that a shot? So we took our $3,000 and we did a little bit of market research and we just found a city and we decided to move there and start a language school together because we had nothing to lose. Worst case scenario, we're lucky that we have great parents. We'd move in with them for like 2 to 3 months and then get jobs and continue on the path that we were on before. And to our surprise, the language school worked. We were fully booked within 30 days of opening.
That's really cool. What is the benefit of learning a second language?
Oh, there are tons and tons of benefits, not only from the professional side and the personal growth side. So the professional side is obviously if you speak, especially if it's a in-demand language, generally salaries tend to be higher for people who are bilingual than people who only speak one language. And it opens up a lot of opportunities for you. For example, if you work for a company that you speak Spanish, you learn Spanish. If you work with a company that has offices in Latin America, you have a lot more opportunities in that company than you would have if you only spoke English. Same thing if you speak, Mandarin Chinese or almost any language out there, your professional opportunities grow. And, you can move to these countries. Imagine making US dollars and spending Mexican pesos, which is what I'm lucky enough to do right now. I tell people, if you want to get a 400% raise, move to Mexico. I mean, if you can figure out a way to keep your salary and you just want to make it go four times as far, move to Mexico, move to Colombia, move to Argentina, live on a beach, and you'll have a cleaner and a maid and a cook and a driver, and you'll still have more money left over than you ever did living in the United States. I know you live in Seattle, Brett. That's not a cheap place to live. So, you took that income, you moved down here, you would be the 1%, higher than the 1% in this part of the world. So that's one of the benefits of learning a language. It also implies the second, this flexibility, right? You don't have to be only in English-speaking countries. You move to other places in the world and still communicate with the people in their local language. There's also the medical benefits. Alzheimer's, if you speak two or more languages, they've said that, it delays late onset Alzheimer's up to 5 or 6 years. Mental coherence stays in there for longer if you're bilingual. It does something to your brain elasticity that kind of keeps your brain agile for longer in your life if you learn another language. So those are some of the basics.
So one thing I'm curious about is the fact that, a lot of people say do not mix business with pleasure. You started your first job, your first business with your wife. How did that dynamic go? Were there things you guys had to work out in the relationship versus business, things of that nature?
Yeah, great question. And it's if somebody asked me, would you recommend doing that? I'd be like, absolutely no. There are only two possible outcomes when you work with your spouse. It's either you get divorced or you have a very strong relationship. There's no middle ground. You're not going to stay in the middle. You're not going to be okay. It's one of those two things. And I don't know what the breakdown is, if it's 50% one side, 50% the other. But luckily for us, it did cause us to have a much stronger relationship. But literally, we opened our business and got married within a two-week period. So kind of, our whole married relationship has been in this dynamic. We still work together today in our biggest business, LiveLingua.com. She takes care of the academic side. I take care of the kind of business and IT side of the business. So we've been working together for 12 years. The key to succeeding, if you're going to do this with your spouse, is learn how to argue. You have to learn how to fight. If something's bothering you, you should say it in the moment and argue about it so that it doesn't become a bigger issue down the road. I will give all the credit to my wife for this because she's, a fiery Latino woman. She's all about arguing. Me being American, I was like, yeah, I avoid conflict. But they don't. And it's a lot healthier for a relationship if you just kind of argue about the little things instead of waiting for the big things to explode in your face a few years down the road. And I think that's been one of the keys to our success. And also, we've been a little lucky that our skill sets are so different. She's a teacher, I'm an engineer, that our jobs don't overlap that much. I make sure I stay on my side of the track, so to speak, and she stays on her side, and the business runs pretty smoothly.
Cool. So other than the relationship aspect, what was the most difficult part of starting your own business the first time?
I've been on a number of podcasts, and oddly enough, nobody's ever asked me that question before, so I'm trying to think. I guess the uncertainty was kind of the difficult part. That's what keeps a lot of people from taking the jump because they, if you have a steady job, it's even worse, right? Because why would you give up a steady job, even if you don't love it, in order to take this kind of risk? So the uncertainty is always there. You need to have a pretty high tolerance for stress if you're going to run your own business. These days, being an entrepreneur has become almost trendy. Everybody, wants to be one or says they're one. I mean, if you go on LinkedIn, the number of people who say they're CEOs is kind of laughable. And then you look, they have like a one-page website that they're the CEO of. Being in business is not for everybody. So you really have to ask yourself, can I tolerate like a pretty high level of stress? And am I open to failing constantly? I don't like to use the word failing, which is why I pause there. But am I open to things not working at a regular basis? And if you answer yes to those, it might be for you. I mean, you can give it a try. But that is the hardest part of entrepreneurship, the constant uncertainty. Unlike most jobs, you're not getting a paycheck every, once every 2 weeks or something like that. That's not how entrepreneurship works.
So how do you deal with the uncertainty and that feeling of things not working out / failure?
Oh, me? I hit people over the head with sticks.
That's the way to do it?
Yeah. But The more complicated answer is you have to find ways to relieve your stress. I practice a Japanese martial art called Kendo, and I've been practicing for 20 years, and it's essentially Japanese sword fighting. So that really helps me deal with the stress. And then you have to kind of, the second part is the acceptance of what you can control and what you can't. And there are a lot of things that you can't control in the business. And once you accept that, your level of stress will drop a lot. The problem is when people try to control the uncontrollable, that's when the stress becomes uncontrolled. You know, it goes out of control. Because you're saying, hey, I'm stressing out about something, but you've really nothing you can do about it.
So what got you into wanting to help other people start businesses?
That it became my passion. A lot of people say, follow your passion, and that's, you'll never work a day in your life, I think is the quote. I totally do not agree with that. I say, if you follow your passion, that's the quickest way to kill your passion is to follow it and make it a business. But I do believe in building your passion. If you had asked me 12 years ago if, you know, online business and business in general was my passion, I'd be absolutely not. Seems like an interesting thing to try, but it's not. But I've been working at it for the last 12 years, and I've become pretty decent at it within my niche, right? I'm bootstrapping online businesses is my niche. And I found that there are other people out there who kind of would like to have a similar lifestyle that I do. I mean, I can work when I want. I work 50 or 60 hours a week, so don't get me wrong. It's no 4-hour work week for me. But I can take today off if I feel like it. Or tomorrow off if I feel like it. I have freedom. And that's what a lot of other people are really looking for, I found, when they want these online businesses. I slowly started as a mentor with a lot of these business people and then moved on to be as a paid coach to help other people start businesses. In a lot of cases, I invest as either an angel investor or somebody on their board in the businesses because I love this stuff. This is my sport. I told you I didn't know anything about American football or baseball, but I know quite a bit about this and I really, really enjoy it.
So what does it mean to bootstrap?
A lot of people who are starting businesses are kind of stuck in that old mentality. I will totally admit, so was I when I started. You know, starting a business costs money, right? You have to rent out a facility. You have to have staff. In order to get a business, how do you do it? You either go out and you try to get venture capitalists to invest in your business idea, or you go to the bank and you take out this huge loan. So a lot of people don't launch their business because they think that's what it takes. Bootstrapping, on the other hand, is starting a business for almost no money. For example, LiveLingua, which is a multi-7-figure business that we launched. We launched it for $60, $59.99, I think, was how much it cost to launch the business. That's how much it cost to get a domain and 1 year of hosting on Bluehost.com back in 2008. That's all we invested in the business. That's pretty much what bootstrapping is. It doesn't mean zero money, but it means very, very low investments. It's like, you could start it as a side hustle. So if you have a full-time job and you have an extra $200 a month and you started a business with that, that would essentially be counted as bootstrapping. If you had a rich dad and he gave you millions of dollars, that's not bootstrapping. Or if you had a venture capitalist come in, that's not bootstrapping. But there are different kinds of business. When you bootstrap, you have to be in for the long game because bootstrapping a business means it grows slowly. If you have $1 million to throw at marketing, you can have your businesses spike up there. It's much more stressful. If you go in for venture capital money, they want 20% growth every single month. And that's huge. I mean, because they want the return on their money. That's a huge amount of stress. When you're bootstrapping, you kind of slowly learn it. You pick it up and you grow your business kind of, 1 or 2% every single month. And by the end of 5 years, you'll have a 6-figure, maybe 7-figure business, but also probably have a lot more control of your time and enjoy the journey a lot more if you do it that way.
So what are some of the biggest hurdles you help people overcome? Other than just the investment.
Yeah. So the biggest hurdle is generally analysis paralysis. They don't want to, most people don't want to launch their business until their business is perfect. And that's too long. There's actually a quote out there, I believe it's from Jack Dorsey, one of the founders of Twitter, that says, if you're not embarrassed by the first version of your product, you waited too long to launch it. And that is probably one of the things I teach the most and the hurdles I try to help people get over. Just launch your product out there. You have to do a little bit of preliminary research, right? Make sure that some people are looking for it. But don't try to kind of provide everything on version one, because what you provide, 80% of it, people won't even want. Get the bare basics of what you're trying to offer out there. See what people say. Receive the feedback, which is a lot, the next step, which is a lot harder for a lot of people because they kind of get emotionally invested in their business. Take the feedback objectively and then make changes in whatever it is you're offering, the service or the product that you're offering, based on that feedback, and slowly iterate. There's a great book out there by Eric Ries called The Lean Startup, and it talks exactly about this process. Launch something, get the feedback, improve it. Launch it again, get the feedback, improve it, launch it again. The faster you can do that, the faster you can have a successful business.
That sounds like very, very good advice. Trying to find a better word, but brain.
Coffee. It's early in the morning, right?
So you've been featured in Forbes, Entrepreneurial Magazine, Entrepreneur Magazine, the Boston Globe, and other top publications, as well as a speaker in multiple conferences around the world. Do you ever experience the fraud phenomenon? Who am I to be here?
Oh, every minute of every day. I mean, you know, I'm actually working with a great mindset coach right now, because, and we're actually working on exactly that, because even I don't consider myself a success yet. I don't feel like I'm a success yet. And that's one of the things that we're trying to work on, because according to him, and objectively speaking, by a lot of measures, I might be, but I don't feel that way. You know, I've been to some conferences where I'm by far, like, you know, I have the smallest business there, right? And I'm sitting there and people start talking and it's so far over my head that I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And every time that happens, I'm like, yeah, I still have so much to go, you know, so long to go. One of the interesting realizations was when I started, the first two businesses I launched were a success. So the brick and mortar school we had talked about, and then this online school, LiveLingua. So at the beginning, I had never read a business book. I had never studied any of that. And I thought, why would I need to read a business book? This whole business thing seems super easy, right? Because the first two businesses worked. Then I launched a dozen businesses that didn't go anywhere. And then I lost the online business overnight because Google did an algorithm update and I had to build it up again. That was the point I started studying. And that was about 10 years ago now. And now that I've studied more, I know I don't know anything, kind of thing, right? So that's kind of part of the journey and part of why I feel more like a fraud. I would actually argue that, you know, the higher you go up, if you talk to people, you know, if you talk to Bill Gates or Elon Musk or something like that, they might even have more of an imposter syndrome than I do. I have a theory that the kind of the higher we get up, the outside world thinks we have it all together, but the kind of more the self-doubt gets even bigger the higher up we get there.
Yeah, that's a good point. We always think that other people have it figured out. But the one thing that I've realized in my life is that we're all just messed up in our own little ways, different.
Or big ways sometimes, right? Exactly. Exactly.
So if I had an awesome business idea that I would want to bootstrap, what would it look like if I brought it to you and say, hey, let's work together?
Okay. So the first thing that if you had an awesome business idea is we would evaluate your awesome business idea. Because, you know, everybody in the world has awesome business ideas. I would say half of them aren't awesome. So there are generally two types of business ideas, and I can only help you on one of them. The first type is the visionary business idea. Again, I'll say Elon Musk, Richard Branson, right? These guys who create, hey, I'm going to build a friggin' rocket to go to Mars. Steve Jobs, I'm going to build this phone where we can all, you know, communicate and type every day. It's not something that people were asking for, but they built it and then we wanted it, right? So they're these visionaries that kind of see the future. I can't help you at all in that, right? That's not my area that I have any experience in. The second area for entrepreneurs is the entrepreneurs who see a need, see that nobody's meeting that need or not meeting it well, and then they build businesses around that. That is kind of my area of expertise. So if you came to me with your business idea and you say, hey, I want to invent a teleporting machine, I'm like, yeah, I'm not the guy to talk to. Like, I wouldn't even know what to do, you know. Forget about the science behind it, but, you know, I wouldn't know how to market a product that nobody's ever heard of before. But if you come with a business idea that says, okay, look, I currently work for a company and they're always having trouble with this thing and they can't find anybody to provide it, either it's a piece or a service, I know how to do that. So I do it for them in the company. I bet if my company needs it, so do all these other companies out there. That's the kind of business idea I could help you with, right? So we would go in there, we would actually see, using Google keyword tools and other tools, you can actually see how many people every month look for something. There's actually a mathematical formula to figure out whether it's worth your time. For example, pink plastic lawn flamingos, right? So let's say I have an idea. I'm going to sell these because nobody's selling, you know, there's no e-commerce store that specializes in this. So we go online, we see how many people look for it. Let's say 100. Generally speaking, for my calculation, I'm going to say you can sell to one out of 100 people. Just as a kind of pessimistic business view, let's see what would happen if that happens. So how much is a pink flamingo worth in profit? $20. So you're like, if 100 people are looking for a month and you can sell to 1% of those, your business would make $20 a month. Is that worth your time? And I'm guessing for most people out there, they're like, no, I'm not going to spend a year or two building a business where there's, you know, I'd make $20. Most people skip this step, right? Because they just do the business idea, they do everything without actually figuring out if it makes money. If we did that same calculation, but 100,000 people were looking for it, so you're selling 100 a month for $20, then you're like, okay, I'm making $2,000-$3,000 off of this. That might be something that's worth your time. That's kind of the first step that I would do with any business owner before they ever launch the business. And it saves so much time and money because that calculation, you know, we can do this in we do that in an afternoon. I'll sit down with you and tell you whether your business idea has a chance of succeeding. The final step there is you take a look at the competition. Because if you do want to sell pink flamingos, you say, yeah, it's worth my time. But you go online and there's like 50 stores already doing it. And 10 of them are super established and brand names. I would generally say don't do the business either, right? Because you're like, unless you have the money to compete with somebody who's already been here for 10 years or you have this really unique value proposition, it's not worth your time. Now, don't get discouraged. There are so many of these niche businesses out there. And by niche, I mean businesses that can make you $5,000 or $10,000 a month that most big businesses wouldn't even look at, right? If you went to Amazon and say, hey, I have a business idea that can make you $50,000. If you went up to Bezos and said, I have a $50,000 a year business idea I want to propose to you, he would laugh at you. I think, he makes more per like minute than that, right? So those are the niches that I like to find. The ones where these big boys will never, ever compete in them because it's just not worth their time.
So of all the businesses that you've helped, what has been your favorite success story?
The chocolate factory in Southeast Asia. So I was a majority owner in a chocolate factory. I had mentored this girl for a few years in another business. That business went under, but then she came to me with a proposal for a chocolate factory. It sounded good. We launched it. It was a success. And it was a lot of fun. We learned a lot about chocolate and we learned about the rest of the stuff. I ended up selling my shares back to her because the profit wasn't enough by US standards to make it worth the time I was spending. But it was a wonderful experience for about 5 years running a chocolate factory in Southeast Asia. I was jokingly, when I went to conferences, they'd call me Willy Wonka when I got there. Ironically, I don't like chocolate. So, I was like, I'm more of a gummy bears guy myself.
Yeah. Willy Wonka is the first place I went to as well.
Exactly. I think a lot of people did. I did actually own a purple top hat for a little while.
Oh, man. I would end every conversation with good day, sir.
And said, hey. I did not have Oompa Loompas in my defense, but yes.
So we're coming to the end of our time together. One thing I like to ask my guests is to do a 1 minute of motivation. You can imagine this as if you have a time machine and you're going back in time to your 8-year-old self and you want to convey everything you need to live a happy and joy-filled life. But unfortunately, you only have a minute until you're plopped back into the future. Or you can think about it as condensing your entire life's message into a minute. So you ready?
I will give it my best shot.
All right, let's go.
Okay, so I'm going to start with my favorite quote again that we talked about. If they were to write a book about your life, would anybody want to read it? To live a life that's worth reading about, you really need to push yourself. Face your dragons. Fall down, but get back up again. Don't be afraid to try new things and make personal growth your daily habit. So every day you have to go out, walk those paths that you haven't walked before and try to reach that goal that to a lot of people seems out of their reach, but to you, you can reach it as long as you take one step forward every day. So at the end of your life, when you sit down to read your own book, it'll be a bestseller.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being on my podcast. I very much enjoyed listening to your story, how your unique upbringing gave you an interesting perspective on life. And then you were able to do what, well, a lot of people our age did was look at this fantastical world of computers and how you can just get a job by learning how to program. But unfortunately, finding out that's not your passion and then trying to find something more fulfilling in your life by joining the Peace Corps. But then deciding to do the thing that sounds like a terrible idea of starting a business with your significant other, but turned out to be a great idea as it helped build your relationship together, as well as creating three fantastic businesses and then helping other people start their own businesses so they can live their passion. So thank you so much for what you do to this world. And thank you so much for being on my podcast.
Brett, it's been a pleasure.
May your day be special. And there you have it, folks. That was my interview with the Ray Blakeney. Wow. Starting a business with his wife and it ending up well. It's cool. Communication is the key. Having good communication and good boundaries. I'm happy they're able to make it. Plus the desire to help people. I think it's commendable. If you want to find out more about Ray and what he's up to, you can check out his current primary project, www.livelingua.com. The link is in the description. One of the top three language schools in the world. Podcast Hawk, a website that helps you get booked as a guest on podcasts on autopilot. Or you can contact him directly at rayblakeney.com. Thank you so much for listening to episode 106. That is over 2 years of podcasts. How cool is that? You know this one's taking me forever. I apologize. But you stuck it out. And so I love you for who you are. If you want to check me out, Joyous Expansion, email me for any reason at BRE2T's, UPR2E's at joyousexpansion.com. LinkedIn, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram at Joy's Expansion. But of course, my Facebook is Increase Your Joy because my SEO game sucks. Once again, I'm Brett Dupree, your champion of authentic joy, joyous expansion, life coach, and catalyst of transformation for the Church of Austin. Wishing you once again to be love, to be joy, to be awesome. Now play my jingle.
JoyousExpansion.com. JoyousExpansion.com. Come and say hello to Brett Dupree. He is an inspirational life coach. Good for you and good for me. He turned my life from gray to blue. I'm sure he'll do the same for you. Get in touch and you'll see your life will change dramatically. JoyousExpansion.com. JoyousExpansion.com. Yeah.